Welcome in, podcast listeners. We have got a loaded program for you. In the first hour, Todd Furman. Second hour, Sean Merriman. Third hour, the awful Joel Klatt. A lot to dive into and dissect. NFL, college football, big picture storylines. What a comeback for Patrick Mahomes. And how about my Titans and Derrick Henry with the walk-off? So much to enjoy. Huge weekend of sports. The Outkick podcast begins now.
Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
It wasn't easy watching the Titans take on the Baltimore Ravens on Sunday, but my team, and you guys know who listen to this show all the time, I'm a season ticket holder, live in Nashville, cursed Tennessee Titan fan. What a win. What an unbelievable win. Massive battle, 2-6-3 teams. Titans are down by double digits in the second half, and just a couple of absolute man plays by the Titans to get the win. The A.J. Brown, if you haven't seen it, the A.J. Brown catch and touchdown is as ridiculous beast mode of a play as I have seen from a wide receiver this year. The Ravens should have had that tackle several yards short of a first down. Would have been maybe a tough decision for the Titans. Do you kick a field goal or do you go for it? And probably I think they would have ended up going for it there. But instead, he scores. Then the Ravens get the ball. They get the two-point conversion, perfect play call. Ryan Tannehill fakes the handoff to Derrick Henry, goes in standing up. I mean, I don't know how that would not have been effective or efficient in that way. Just an incredible performance by the Titans to get a touchdown there and the two-point conversion. The Ravens drive back down. Justin Tucker hasn't missed a field goal in like 15 years, it feels like. He bombs it through easily. And then you're in this kind of crazy scenario where the game goes into overtime and you feel like whoever wins the toss, it was the exact same situation in the other really, really good overtime game that we saw between the Packers and the Colts, where the Colts had like eight different penalties on them. Those were, I thought, the two just crazy moments when you have those coin tosses and you think whoever wins the coin toss is going to win the game. But what happened? The Packers won the coin toss, turned it over, and then the Colts came down and won. And then in the similar vein, you have the Titans who lose the coin toss. Lamar Jackson gets the ball. Titans get their first sack of the game. And the Titans come down and have the walk-off with Derrick Henry. And that play with Derrick Henry, the walk-off. I'll talk about this a little bit later in the show. But to me, there are different games that take place during the course of the season where you answer the question, hey, is this team capable of winning a championship? And I'm not really convinced the Titans can win a championship because I don't think they can get pressure on the quarterback. But I'm pretty convinced now after watching the Ravens play a lot of games, that's not a Super Bowl caliber team. There are, I'm not saying they can't win a playoff game or they can't be in a position where they have a chance late, but this is a team that has some pretty significant structural flaws, and they are getting worse as the season goes on as opposed to getting better. And you know what? In the game I watched between the Colts and the Packers, I felt like both the Colts and the Packers could go on and win the Super Bowl. I really do, because the big question for Phillip Rivers has always been, is it going to be the guy who can ever get to a Super Bowl, right? And with the Chargers at the end of his career, he couldn't have anybody block for him, and he can't move. He's basically a stationary guy in the pocket. And so if he can't move, then he throws the ball up, and he ends up putting himself in a position where there are a lot of opportunities where bad things can happen. And so as you kind of break down exactly what happens there, it's really kind of fascinating to see how good the Colts could be going forward with Phillip Rivers as their quarterback. And we know how good Aaron Rodgers is, by the way. The one thing I think probably Aaron Rodgers would like to be able to do again is I think he would like to be able to have a couple of those plays to do all over again in terms of down near the goal line, whether it was the right decision to spike the football and take away one of the pass opportunities, because I thought the Green Bay Packers were going to go down and actually find a way to win late against the Colts, and I bet a lot of Colts fans did too after that ridiculous throw on 3rd and 10 down the middle of the field for 50 yards. I really did feel like they were going to go find a way to get it done, and it just flat out didn't end up happening for them. So as you kind of break down in those scenarios, I was just so impressed to see Derrick Henry do what he did to the Ravens again, walk off, and for the Ravens to have to spend as long as they did stewing over that home playoff loss, to have the Titans show up and basically do it to them all over again, that was a phenomenal, incredible, lots of fun win to watch. And again, I'm not convinced that the Titans are really a team that can contend for a Super Bowl. I'm not. I don't think they have rush defensive ends. I think they wasted their first round pick, got a lot of injuries, major issues on a lot of different levels for the Titans. I am convinced the Ravens aren't a team that can win a Super Bowl now, not as they're presently constituted. And I also believe, if you look forward and think about it, I also believe that the Colts are going to beat the Titans on Sunday and take command of that division. And I do think the Colts can start to get hot because they have the defense that could theoretically give a guy like Patrick Mahomes some trouble in the postseason. And I'm not sure how many other teams have a defense of their caliber. But man, what a win. What an incredibly fun game to watch. I'd like to think my team could win a division and we could host a home playoff game for the first time in 12 years or so. But we'll have to wait and see what exactly goes on there. So early games, fantastic. Titans, Ravens, and also the Packers and the Colts. And going forward now, we also had a phenomenal Sunday night football game, the second divisional game between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Raiders. And boy, oh boy, was this a game that you and I and everybody else out there had an awful lot of fun rolling into Thanksgiving week with. And I mean, let's be honest, that's what Patrick Mahomes does. He wins games that you think your team is going to win. The Raiders went on the road and they won in Kansas City earlier this year. And they thought when they hit Jason Witten for that touchdown pass, I guarantee you, hey, worst case scenario, we're going to overtime. And the great teams don't try to get into overtime. They try to win the game in regulation and not leave anything to coin flips or who gets possession or things that are outside of their control. And what is in the Chiefs' control is this. They have the best quarterback in the NFL. And if you were the Oakland Raiders, even after that Jason Witten play, minute 45 or so remaining, the Chiefs went the length of the field. And what I loved about it was you saw very early on, this is not a team driving to try to bang through a 45-yard field goal. They're trying to win this football game. And the Raiders had a bus dropping. It looked into zone coverage. Travis Kelce worked his way across. Mahomes got outside the pocket. He's wide open as Travis Kelce can ever be on the football field, given he's a pretty big target. And Mahomes found him, and he made the Raiders pay. And to me, I was talking earlier, not sure about the Titans, certain that the Ravens aren't a Super Bowl contender. It's pretty clear, I think, at this point that both the Colts and the Packers are. Raiders aren't a Super Bowl contender. They may be a playoff team. We'll see exactly how the rest of their season ends up shaking out. They've got a lot of weapons on the offensive side of the ball. Derek Carr did a lot of things well last night. But ultimately, they didn't have Patrick Mahomes. And when you don't have Patrick Mahomes, guess what happens? Sooner or later, Patrick Mahomes makes you pay. And it was late that he made him pay. And as a result, that's why I keep saying, until something crazy happens, the Chiefs have to be your favorite to win the Super Bowl. They're better than they were last year. I think they are less challenged because they feel a little bit to me like the New England Patriots with Brady, where every now and then they don't rise to the same level as their regular season competition. But when it gets into the postseason, it's going to be really, really hard to beat them. And I don't think anybody is. I think the Chiefs are going to win the Super Bowl this year and repeat as Super Bowl champions. Now, it's hard to do. It may require them to go on the road against the Steelers. Home field advantage is going to be of minimal importance, I think, this year. You know what's never going to be of minimal importance? Having the best quarterback in the NFL. And I think, ultimately, that the Chiefs gave you a little bit of a preview for what they're able to do last night against the Raiders. You can't give them the ball with a chance to go down the field and win, because I felt like it was like 9 times out of 10 that was what was going to happen. I was sitting watching this game, and I said, look, the Chiefs being able to put this into this game into overtime is a foregone conclusion. So I said, kind of talking to myself, the question was, are they going to get the win? And you saw a couple of different quarterback situations. You saw with the Packers, Aaron Rodgers tried to do the same thing. He wasn't trying to put that game into overtime late against the Colts. He was trying to win it. And you felt like he was so angry at himself that he didn't manage to drive, whatever the heck it was, 92 yards and get that score in that situation. And you know Patrick Mahomes would have been furious with himself too if the game had gone into overtime. And so as you break all this down, the three biggest and most interesting games, I thought, Colts going up against the Packers, Titans against the Ravens, and the game that we saw in the night, phenomenal games, all three of them, the Raiders hosting the Chiefs. Ultimately, it came down to big-time quarterback play, and nobody has bigger and better quarterback play than the Chiefs, which is why Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs have to be, I think, even more of a favorite this year to win the Super Bowl than they were for much of last season. All right, we're going to talk with my guy Todd Furman coming up next, breaking down everything college football and the NFL. We got a loaded program for you. Sean Merriman, Lights Out, joins us in hour two, and the awful Joel Klatt will join us in hour three. Loaded, loaded show. Monday edition, Outkick, Thanksgiving week. Hope you guys are having a fantastic start to your week, and thank you for spending it with us.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Joined now by my Lock It In co-host, one of them, Todd Furman, at Todd Furman on Twitter. You can find him there. He's up early with us here on the Outkick as the sun is way, way, way away from actually being rising in the desert of Las Vegas where he is. Furman, how about my Titans? How about that Derrick Henry walk-off touchdown run? You, to your credit, you thought there was some value on the Titans going into that game, and they backed you up. I mean, they made a nice comeback in the fourth quarter.
You know what? They took advantage of a game where both teams were dealing with a number of injuries. The Titans were down a couple of cogs on their offensive line, and that had been a real weakness without Taylor Lewan. But you look at Baltimore on the other side, arguably their three best defensive linemen. But for the Titans to do what they did, going into hostile territory, erasing that 11-point deficit, and ultimately getting the win, showed an awful lot for a team that needed a victory like that. And anytime you can do it outright in the NFL as a 6-point dog, it is impressive. I'm just glad you weren't arrested in Nashville running naked through the streets pulling an all-night celebration, given what you've seen from the Titans the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I needed a win, especially after having watched Jared Garantano throw another pick six on Saturday night when it looked like Tennessee might be able to win one as an outright underdog double digits on the road against Auburn. I mean, they were in really good shape late in the third quarter until that pick six happened. But let's dive into a lot of the different games. One of the big takeaways, and we talked a bit about this in the open, I feel like Justin Herbert basically locked up Rookie of the Year in an unfortunate way, because Joe Burrow's now out for the rest of the year. Tua got benched, and Herbert just came out and continued to do what he does, which is post ridiculous numbers. And so I'm curious, and I'm going to ask Sean Merriman this in the second hour, so I've already jotted down the question, but can you remember a guy in college like Justin Herbert who, remember, he won basically the Rose Bowl as a running quarterback, and he never looked anywhere near the same caliber of quarterback that he has for the Chargers, that has, as a rookie, looked this much better than he did as a quarterback his last year in college? Because I can't. I mean, he looks like a totally different player than he did at Oregon.
There's no doubt they've taken the governor off and allowed him to throw the deep ball, something that wasn't in the arsenal at Oregon. And whether you
isn't that crazy when you see how well he can throw the deep ball in the NFL with the most talented football players in the world, isn't it crazy they didn't let him do it in college?
It's pretty crazy. But the other thing, too, Oregon didn't have NFL-caliber wide receivers. That was one of the areas where they dealt with a ton of injuries in Herbert's final season in Eugene. But I think Mario Cristobal has to take a lot of the blame for running a conservative offense there. We know he comes from that Alabama coaching tree and the old-school mentality where it was run first. And now we're also dealing with Marcus Arroyo, who is his offensive coordinator there, and the impact we're seeing at UNLV. But it's definitely impressive when you watch it. And I guess if you're trying to find a comp, you can look in the rookie class, and while it wasn't going from college to the NFL, it was a lot like Joe Burrow in his junior season at LSU to what we saw Joe Burrow look like in his senior season before he led LSU to the national championship and won the Heisman. But very rarely do you see a guy make this kind of leap, and it just speaks to the fact that his skill set was clearly underutilized in his final season at Oregon.
We're talking to Todd Furman. You can follow him on Twitter at Todd Furman. Who's going to win the NFC East?
I think it's going to be a war of attrition, and you look at the Giants, it's pretty incredible. The Giants have gone 3-2 over their last five games, and their two losses they have in that span is a one-point loss on Thursday night to the Philadelphia Eagles and the two-point loss on Monday Night Football to the Bucks. If they get both of those games to go their way, we're talking about them being a runaway freight train. Ultimately, though, the Giants' schedule gets a lot more difficult down the stretch, and I think Thursday takes on a massive amount of importance, a game that we'll all watch on Fox on Thanksgiving between the Cowboys and the Washington Football Team. The winner of that game, in my opinion, I think has the inside track because Philadelphia is an absolute dumpster fire right now. And if Doug Peterson wants to see what he has in a second-round pick, I'd put Jalen Hurts as early as this weekend because Carson Wentz isn't getting it done. And you look at Dallas, they get the big win yesterday beating the Vikings outright on the road. Meanwhile, Washington, you have a veteran stabilizing influence in Alex Smith, and you're starting to see their weapons get healthier. I wouldn't be stunned at all if Washington goes in there and knocks Dallas off its perch on Thursday, winning that game outright.
Let's presume whoever wins the NFC East, there's probably not a tremendous amount of difference in terms of what the lines would be for those games. It looks like the Bucks are going to be kind of slanted in there, right? Slotted in there, maybe I should say, as the 5 seed, which would mean they'd be going on the road against whoever wins the NFC East. How much of a favorite are we talking about Tampa Bay being over whichever team is playing at home in the NFC East?
You're looking at Tampa, as things stand right now, more than a touchdown favorite. I mean, we saw that number against the Giants. The Giants' power rate actually worse than the Eagles and the Cowboys, as things stand right now. Very similar as far as Washington is concerned as we continue to adjust their metrics. But you would be looking at Tampa more than a touchdown favorite unless something drastic really changed. And if you want to go back and find a historical comparison of sorts, it almost begs the parallel to the Marshawn Lynch earthquake game where the Seahawks were a massive underdog against the Saints. New Orleans goes in there and lays an absolute egg. But I think you're going to see a team playing in the elements. And other than Tom Brady, there's nobody on this Tampa roster that you trust in a game of that magnitude. Maybe Bruce Arians, maybe Byron Leftwich, Todd Bowles. None of those guys would have me brimming with confidence that I'd be inclined to bet one of those NFC East teams if they were more than a touchdown dog if you got a little bit of sloppy weather working in your favor.
You are the biggest Jameis Winston proponent in the media in the country. Taysom Hill went out and played, I thought, pretty well. Flash in the pan, or is there something to build on there for the Saints and what they saw from Taysom Hill?
It's one thing when you go out there and do it when you have the full week of preparation and you can utilize the element of surprise. Now you've put something on tape. Let's see how Sean Payton and this offense can innovate and create another iteration of Taysom Hill. But when you look at the NFL, it took them more than a season to figure out some of what Lamar Jackson did. And I don't think Lamar Jackson has completely regressed this season. A lot of it has to do with the offensive line. So when he goes on the road in Denver, we're going to see exactly how the Broncos scheme, what they can take away, and kind of make Taysom Hill play left-handed. But I think the bigger storyline in the Saints' win against the Falcons yesterday was how well that defense played. They went out there, they pitched a shutout. Taysom Hill didn't have to do much outside of his comfort zone, and that's really been the big revelation sparking this Saints' resurgence. We saw it on Sunday night against the Bucks. They followed it up against the 49ers. This defense might actually be the best defense going in the NFC, and that includes the likes of the Tampa Bay Bucks and the Los Angeles Rams, who we'll see later tonight.
You just mentioned Lamar Jackson, and obviously I started off this interview asking you about the Titans and their big win. But Lamar Jackson now 6-5 in his last 11 games. Among those five losses, Titans twice, the Chiefs, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and all of those are kind of rolling together in a way where it's like whenever he goes up against the best possible competition, things don't go particularly well for him. Obviously, the Patriots got him last week in that rainstorm up in Foxborough. Should people be nervous if they are Ravens fans about what exactly is going on with Lamar Jackson in this offense, or is this an aberration? In other words, are the Ravens causing their own problems, or are the problems being caused for them?
I think it's a little of column A and a little of column B. I mean, we've talked about Lamar's skill set and how he's best suited to operate from a clean pocket, to play when the Ravens have a lead, to have that stingy defense behind him. Now suddenly you're looking at a Ravens team that's had a muddled mess as far as their running backs are concerned. I think J.K. Dobbins should have been the guy, and it wasn't until yesterday against the Titans that he got the workload he deserves as the game breaker in the backfield compared to Mark Ingram and Gus Edwards. But when you lose a Pro Bowler in Ronnie Stanley that you gave nearly $100 million to a left tackle, you had Marshall Yanda, who's ultimately going to make his way into Canton, retire before the season, it's tough to replace two of the building blocks in front of Lamar Jackson. Then you look at some of the off-field distractions. Hollywood Brown dropped a couple balls early in that game. You've done nothing in your career that gives you carte blanche to run your mouth. At least your cousin's gone out there and performed and put up gaudy numbers from a statistical standpoint. There's a reason that the Ravens activated Dez Bryant, and I think their weapons aren't as good as we were led to believe last year. And defensively, they have to get healthy. No Calais Campbell, no Garrett Wolf, no Brandon Williams. That ultimately allowed Derrick Henry to have a repeat performance what we saw in the playoffs. So until Baltimore has all of their complement of weapons healthy, we can't fully judge Lamar, but there's no doubt that he's not Kyler Murray, and I don't know if he's ever going to be a Justin Fields the way we look at his projections, knowing he's going to be a first-round pick coming out of Ohio State next season.
Okay, let's talk about that. I'm going to get to Thursday Night Football because I'm actually curious. Well, let me go ahead and go there because we got the Ravens game going up against the Steelers. Steelers are 10-0. That was a super physical game between the Titans and the Ravens. They now have to turn around and play on Thursday night. Different caliber of scrutiny, I think, is going to be on Lamar Jackson now because he's 6-4, as I mentioned before, losing a lot of these big games. This is going to be an almost prove-it-to-me type scenario. Effectively, the Steelers, 4.5-game lead with 6 to go. If they win this one, the division's fully over. The division may be over no matter what. What do you see in this one for the primetime game on Thanksgiving?
It's going to kill me. The only case I can make in this game is to back the Ravens here catching 3.5. Now, it's probably not a game as things stand right now that's ultimately going to make my betting card, but this is a number that's a touch inflated based on where the power numbers were coming into this past weekend, where we thought the Steelers would open at less than a field goal favorite. The problem for Baltimore is they have to get healthy. Now, Pittsburgh doesn't run the ball nearly as physically or as well as what Derrick Henry can do. James Conner isn't that same kind of back. And when you look at Baltimore in the secondary, I think they can match up against the Steelers' talented trio of receivers. But from an offensive standpoint, Coach Harbaugh and Greg Roman, they better spend 72 hours at the chalkboard trying to figure out every wrinkle, every trick play, and every nuance that they can use to attack this Steelers team. But you're going to get the Ravens, who right now at 6-4 know that they're on the outside looking into the playoff picture. And you mentioned the division race. We're going to be talking about them not even making the postseason. You're going to get them to throw the kitchen sink. I'm just not quite sure it's enough, but it's Ravens or pass as things stand for me right now Monday morning.
What'd you learn in the Colts-Packers game? It was an absolute heavyweight fight. The Colts win it in overtime. Any of your perceptions of either of these teams change based on what you saw?
I feel a little bit more validated. You know my feelings towards
you've been
the Green
anti-
Bay Packers.
The entire state of Wisconsin hates you because you've been anti-Packers for several years now.
The entire state of Wisconsin, I'm not sure what they're more bummed out. The second half that Green Bay put forth in the loss against the Colts or what their Wisconsin Badgers did on the road.
The fight in Reese Davis's took them down.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, Green Bay is going to go where Aaron Rodgers can take them. This is a team that's extremely deficient on the defensive side. You saw that on full display when Frank Reich made some adjustments. I continue, and I said it before the year, the Colts are my pick to win the South. I thought they were a legitimate dark horse in the AFC. Phillip Rivers obviously concerns you, but that's the reason they're not being given the same credit as some of the other contenders. They can run the ball with the emergence of Michael Pittman. It gives them a receiver on the end. They're starting to figure out how to utilize Nyheim Hines, Jonathan Taylor, and defensively, what they did in the second half to confuse Aaron Rodgers and give themselves a chance to come back, that's the kind of victory that resonates going forward. But I do think they're going to have their hands full in the revenge game against the Titans.
Heisman Trophy. We'll get into some college football here with you. How much of a favorite should Kyle Trask be in your mind as we come down the stretch run? I saw some places have him as 1-2 to win the Heisman in the wake of Justin Fields, 3 picks. Mac Jones, just pedestrian effort, and obviously Trevor Lawrence may have lost another game.
I think he has to be a heavy favorite. I mean, when you look at the upcoming schedule and what Kyle Trask is going to have available to him, the game that will ultimately determine his Heisman candidacy, and at this point it may not even matter, would be the SEC Championship against Alabama. And when you look at that performance, unless Trask were to go out there and throw for 200 yards and throw more interceptions than he had touchdowns, I think it's his award to lose. The numbers he's putting up are on par with Joe Burrow. Dan Mullen is an offensive mastermind. And the fact that he's been able to produce at such a high level each of the last 2 weeks without Kyle Pitts is even that much more impressive that their offense hasn't missed a beat. I think there's actually value in betting Kyle Trask as only a 1-2 favorite.
College football, anybody that with value from a national championship perspective to you at this point?
I can't really see it. I think ultimately you'll get more money on a money line rollover if you want to bet any of the big boys. Maybe you believe that Notre Dame can be the team, but the way I see Notre Dame, you're going to have to beat Clemson as an underdog, and then you would be underdogs in both semifinal games. And the Irish, of course, will have their hands full this Friday when they go to Chapel Hill as a modest field goal favorite.
So did that line surprise you? Because it surprised a lot of people that Notre Dame's only around a field goal favored.
I think this Notre Dame secondary is extremely vulnerable. And you give Mac Brown 2 weeks to prepare with an NFL-caliber quarterback in Sam Howell. I think Notre Dame is going to have a lot of trouble trying to slow down that vertical passing game, much like they did against DJ and Clemson in their own building. Now, North Carolina defensively, that remains anybody's best guess because Wake Forest kind of gave the blueprint. If Ian Book wants to throw, this could be the first team to 40. But I think the number is extremely fair. I imagine you're going to get public support for the Irish, but in a little bit of a disjointed week, I think you could see home field advantage matter a little bit more. But it's the Blue Bloods and everybody else. I'm not going to sit here and champion for the little guy in BYU if you're going to potentially turn down a game against Washington. And Cincinnati, hey, they play a physical brand of defense, which would be fun to see against some of the elite teams. But you saw UCF have plenty of success offensively. And while Cincinnati's not the same now, we saw them struggle last year when they had to go to Columbus and take on Ohio State.
Todd Furman, good stuff as always. I will see you later today on the program, 5 o'clock Eastern, 4 o'clock Central, 3 o'clock Mountain, 2 o'clock Pacific on FS1, Fox Bet Live.
Always a pleasure, my good man.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
College football. Let's dive into the larger universe of college football playoff perspectives, right? What did we learn, if anything, going through the weekend that was in college football? The first thing that I think we learned is Kyle Trask is opening up a fairly substantial lead in the Heisman Trophy race, okay? So Justin Fields, just okay. 3 interceptions against Indiana. He was outplayed by Michael Penix Jr. At Alabama, Mac Jones didn't do a lot. They ran the ball so well, they didn't have to throw the ball a ton, but fairly pedestrian, middle-of-the-road effort by him. Trevor Lawrence, and we're going to talk a little bit more about this, Clemson had their game against Florida State canceled a few hours before they were scheduled to play. And then Kyle Trask went out, threw for basically 400 yards, 3 touchdowns against Vanderbilt. And that's what he's going to do, basically, I think, for the remainder of the regular season. So the big question that is out there, and I do think it's a good one, is Kyle Trask going to develop a big enough lead that even if he just plays okay in the SEC championship game against Alabama, that he's going to win the Heisman Trophy? Or is it going to be a situation where so many people are watching that game on December 19th when we're theoretically going to have Alabama playing against Georgia, playing against Florida, that he'll have to play well and or win in order to win the Heisman? I think he's going to have such a big lead from a pure numbers perspective that he's going to be able to win the Heisman Trophy as long as he's not disastrous against Alabama. But the big takeaways here are fairly straightforward. Alabama is going to make the college football playoff. It would be a stunning surprise if Alabama lost one of their final games. They play the Iron Bowl against Auburn this weekend. But if they lost one of those games, whether they play LSU or not, Arkansas is the other team. They're 7-0. I would be stunned if they lost one of those games and they lost to Florida. So I think it's fair to say Alabama is going to be one of the four playoff teams. I also think that you have to make Ohio State a pretty big favorite to be one of the playoff teams as well. And we'll talk a little bit about Northwestern down the line. But Northwestern is likely to win the Big Ten West, so Ohio State's going to be a big favorite for every game they have remaining. I still believe that Clemson is going to come back and beat Notre Dame in the ACC title game. Now, Notre Dame's got a tough game on Friday against UNC, but if they can find a way to win out until they get to the ACC title game, meaning Notre Dame, then I think Notre Dame, even if they lose to Clemson, will have a good chance to advance into the college football playoff. And if that's the case, then everything else that's going on out there is going to be a lot of noise that doesn't necessarily matter that much. Texas A&M can go 9-1. They would still theoretically get left out. BYU and Cincinnati, I know we got a lot of BYU and Cincinnati fans that are out there listening to us right now that keep asking, hey, what can we do to get into the playoff? I think it's going to be hard, even with BYU having to deal with the Washington drama. Are they going to play against a Pac-12 opponent? Are they not? The fact that they said they would play anybody anywhere and then they didn't immediately respond, yes, 100% we'll play you no matter what the scenarios are. Cincinnati, look, Luke Fickell has done an incredible job. They have played pretty outstanding all season, but I don't think those teams are going to be in the mix. I also don't think even if USC or Oregon finish as undefeated Pac-12 champ that they're going to be in the mix. Now that Bedlam has happened, congrats to Oklahoma on a nice win. I don't think there's any way that Oklahoma State obviously is going to be able to get in or anybody else. So the Big 12 is effectively eliminated. There are a lot of different moving parts out there. And ultimately, I think we're going to end up with Alabama, in my opinion. Undefeated Alabama, I think, is likely to be the one seed. In the two spot, I think it's likely to be Ohio State. In the three spot, I believe it's going to be Clemson. I think they will come back and beat Notre Dame. And then I think there's a very good chance that Notre Dame gets in as the four. And so Alabama would be playing against Notre Dame, and we would have a rematch of the Clemson-Ohio State Classic that we had last year with all of that scheduled. So there would be a big advantage to being the overall number one seed. Now, if Florida wins out, then Florida would knock out a team like Notre Dame and would be able to advance to the college football playoff as well. My point here is I would be very, very surprised if Alabama is not in the mix down the stretch. And I think Alabama has to be the overall favorite to win to win more than anybody does right now in college football, because it seems to me that the Crimson Tide defense is really, really, really starting to roll. And we already know how good the offense is. Devontae Smith, nobody can cover him. And if you're out there and you are, Dub, you just asked me a question. You were like, what about A&M? The only way that I can see A&M getting in is if Texas A&M needs Florida to lose, and I believe they need either Clemson to lose in the ACC championship game for a second time, or they need Notre Dame to, for instance, lose to UNC this weekend and then lose to Clemson in the ACC championship game. In other words, they would need one of the ACC schools to get two losses, and they would need Florida to lose out as well. And then they would need to win out. And by the way, I'm not sure that they're going to be able to win out. Now, LSU starting to play a little bit better. Auburn, your Auburn Tigers, very mediocre against Tennessee, but they got the win. And theoretically, Texas A&M would have to beat Tennessee as well. So they haven't played in a couple of weeks because of this ridiculous COVID-related cancellation. So there's just a bunch of moving parts there more than anything else as it pertains to exactly what the college football playoff is going to look like. But that's basically how I believe it's going to be broken down. Now, Tuesday night, we will get the official college football playoff rankings that are out there. And so we'll have a sense for how exactly those are going to be able to be looked at. But I'm already going ahead and projecting where we are going to head. And to me, again, these are the teams that are in the mix. Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, Florida, Texas A&M, Pac-12 champ, very much on the outside looking in. The Big 12 has been eliminated. And ultimately, I don't think that Cincinnati or BYU are going to be able to put themselves in any kind of scenario where they can make that move happen. So look, there are a lot of moving parts. One of the great things about college football is as the pressure increases down the stretch run of the season, and we're effectively into the stretch run, and the stretch run's going to be even more substantial than it usually is. As the stretch run continues, there are guys that will make unexpected plays. Pressure either burst pipes or it makes diamonds. And so we're going to see a lot of burst pipes, and we're also going to see a lot of diamonds. But ultimately, I don't think there are that many teams that are really in the mix when you truly break it down. And that's why my projection is I think two from the ACC will get in. I think Alabama from the SEC. And then I think that that Ohio State from the Big Ten will be the representatives. But it's a lot of moving parts. Look at Clemson right now. They are fired up, and we'll talk a little bit more about that maybe at the top of the second hour of the program. I understand why Dabo Swinney is so fired up. It's one thing for a game to get canceled. It's another thing for a game to get canceled after you are already physically located at the hotel and some of your employees have already gone to the stadium that morning, and then suddenly you're not allowed to play that game. I understand why they could be fired up and why they're upset. Dub, any questions from you about the college football playoff angles? And by the way, congrats to your Auburn Tigers. Tennessee, thanks to Jared Garantano throwing another pick six. That was an ugly game. If Tennessee just runs the ball on every play in the second half, I think they might have won. It doesn't make me think that you're going to be very good at stopping Alabama's running attack.
Yeah, that game this Saturday coming up, minus 21 is the opening number for Bama. I'm not sure how you bet Auburn in that spot, but you're right. Ugly game between my Auburn Tigers and your Tennessee Volunteers. But as far as the playoff goes, I think you're pretty much spot on with your four teams. I think all four of those teams would have to be fairly substantial favorites, certainly with Alabama and Ohio State. So they're almost certainties at this point. So I think those four teams will probably get in. We'll see if Notre Dame can finish out their regular season strong.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, when we come back, we'll talk more about the NFL. How about my boy Derrick Henry? Nice cutback there to dunk all over the Baltimore Ravens. How nervous should the Baltimore Ravens be about their franchise quarterback Lamar Jackson going 6-5 now in his last 11? Have NFL teams started to catch up with what exactly the Ravens are doing on the offensive side of the ball? And we're going to talk with Sean Merriman, Lights Out himself, about everything going on in the NFL. By the way, Joel Klatt scheduled to join us in the third hour of the program. And I want to tell you, as we're going to break here, hopefully you won some money. We were giving away so much at fanduel.com/clay. That line, did you get your bet in on that line, Dub, where it ended up being like 126 or whatever the heck it was by kickoff?
Absolutely, I did. And then I went ahead and bet Auburn minus the points and hit both of them. So that was
nice.
That was a good one.
Yeah, that was a big field goal kick late. I was wondering, my question was, does Gus Malzahn know what the line is? When he kicked that field goal like he did, I started thinking, I think the answer is yes.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.